Om Parthaya Pratibodhitam Purvata Narayanena Swayam Vyasena Kratitam Puranamuna Madhye Mahabharatam Advaitamritavarshinim Bhagavatim Ashtadashadhyayinim So chapter 18, verse 46. Yata pravrittir bhutanam, yena sarvamidantatam. Yena sarvamidam tatam sukarmanatamabhyarcha siddhim vinditi manavaha yataha pravrittihi bhutanam yena sarvam idam tatam sukarmanatam Abhyarcha Siddhyam Vindati Manavaha. Yataha, from whom Pravrittihi. Here Pravritti means the creation. Pravritti also means the energy that moves you forward towards something, like Pravritti and Nivritti. That's how a very common way of using the word Pravritti is that I have a tendency to go towards something. Nivritti is I go away from something. But Pravritti is also used for the creation. So yataha pravrittihi bhutanam, from whom there is understood the pravrittihi bhutanam of all beings, of everything that has come into being, from whom there is the creation of all beings, bhutanam, genitive plural, yena, and by whom sarvam idam, sarvam means all, sarvam idam, all of this, idam is this. So yena, by whom all of this tatam is pervaded. So by whom the whole creation has come into being, right? By whom the creation of all beings is, and by whom all beings, all of this is created. Then, so karmanatam abhyarcha. Worshipping, having worshipped that one from whom the whole creation has come and by whom the whole creation is pervaded. Worshipping that one, so karmana, by means of one's own karma, one's own duties. So karmana tam abhyarcha siddhim vandati manavaha. Of human being, manavaha, that person, vandati, he gains, he attains, or she attains, siddhim. Siddhim means what there is to be accomplished. And here in this case, what is to be accomplished is the antakarana shuddhi. And with that antakarana shuddhi is then the final accomplishment of moksha. But without the antakarana shuddhi, then very difficult to gain moksha. So this is really the means for antakarana shuddhi. Shankara says, Abhyarcha means pujitwa, having worshipped, aradhya means anything. Kevalam jnana nishta yogyata lakshanam siddhi. That accomplishment, that siddhi, which is characterized by yogyata, the qualification for jnana nishta. In other words, what does it take for you to have jnana nishta? Well, the Shravana Manana Nididhyasana, that clarity that the mind has to be available to have that clarity. Nishta. Because without the antakarana shuddhi, your mind is continually being overwhelmed by the different powers of Maya, internal and external. The buddhi gets overwhelmed. And so that's why there's so many sadhanas, So many things that we do to take care of the mind. Again, another thing to really understand about this is all beings have a lot of work to do in terms of gaining that antakarana shuddhi. However, you may have done a tremendous amount of that work before you meet the teacher, or you may meet your teacher and have a lot of work to do. It depends. It's not like all of this work has to be done after you meet your teacher. You could have done a tremendous amount of work, you know, even in for us in this era, all of the inner work, all of the inner child work, working through all of the different traumas, working through all of the painful notions and conclusions we have, working through all of the various abuses. We may have done a tremendous amount of that work before we come to the teacher. And then there's not that much to do. There's still plenty to do, but there's not that much to do. Or we may come to the teacher by our own prarabdha, what brings us at this particular time, you know, with having done very, very little work. That has its own blessing because you get to do that work. Then, you know, being held by this knowledge, that's also very beautiful, to have this knowledge and your teacher there to hold you as you're working through these rather painful things. That's also a tremendous grace. So people will say, you know, well, I wish I would have done all of this work before I got here. And other people will say, I wish I had my teacher here when I had to do all that work. You see what I'm saying? There's pluses and there's pluses and minuses. The same thing when people say, oh, you're so lucky that you came to Swamiji at a young age. You know, they're old now. They're like 80. I wish I would have met Swamiji when I was 20, like you met Swamiji when you were 20. You know, I wish that could have been true for me also. But now the thing for them, they're going to do all of this work, gain all of this knowledge. They may not have jnana nishtha when they leave this planet, when they pass away. But they'll be reborn, and then they'll meet their teacher when they're 10 or 15 or 20. And then these old people will say, oh, I wish I could have met my teacher like you got to meet your teacher when you were just 20. You know? But it's all so, so relative. It's so relative. So now, what we're doing in this section, or what Krishna is doing in this section, is really saying, he's telling us, you know, how do we gain that antakarana shuddhi? What is the best way to gain that antakarana shuddhi? That's what this whole section is about. And he started by talking about all the varnas, the whole caste system. Because at his time, that caste system was alive and well. And that caste system, what we call the Varnas, the Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, that caste system and the stages of life going from Brahmacharya, the stage of being a student, to being a Grahastha, to being a married householder, to be Vanaprastha, where you're preparing for sannyasa, and then to go through sannyasa. These are the various stages of life. You know, and then the varna, what you're born into. All of these things, really, in the Vedic system, are meant to be conducive to antakarana shuddhi and moksha. They're not conducive, they're not really meant to be conducive to anything else. They're conducive to antakarana shuddhi. They're conducive to shanti and to moksha. That's what the whole Veda is about, really. It's about dharma and moksha, and how to live in such a way as to have relative shanti in this world, you know, and then to culminate that with liberation. That's its goal. Its goal is not to become wealthy, or to become powerful, though there are karmas and rituals that you can do to become powerful and to become wealthy, and to become whatever you desire. Actually, there's so many kamya karmas that you can do in order to bring these things to yourself. But that's really not the drishti of the Vedas. And even if you do bring those things to yourself, it's also very clear in the whole Vedic cosmology that don't ever do those at the expense of Dharma. Don't fulfill any kamya karma. Kamya means something that you desire. Don't do a karma to fulfill a desire at the expense of Dharma. The whole Shastra on every level will teach you that Dharma must come first, because without the Dharma, no matter what desires you fulfill, you won't have the Shanti. Yeah. And so they have a structure in the days of old. It's not functioning, it's not really working now, but in the days of old, the whole society, the whole creation, from a Hindu perspective, was structured in such a way that you would be, in your own understanding, in your Vedic understanding, that the birth that you would take, you would be born into, you would be born into a family of brahmanas, kshatriyas, vaishyas, or shudras, depending upon your own karma and depending upon your disposition. If because of your own karma, the disposition that was natural to you at the time of your death was, say, the disposition of a vaishya, then you would be born into a family of vaishyas, where the duties, the vaishya duties, you know, are very spelled out. And so the vision is that your birth would be true to your combination of sattva, rajas, and tamas that makes you into that particular type. And so then being born into your varna, the duties that are laid out for you to do that are very defined in India, those duties are appropriate for you and your temperament. So you may be born as a brahmana, you may be born as a kshatriya, you know, a vaishya or a shudra, but in whatever varna you're born into, that is where you belong, and the duties are laid out, and they match you temperamentally. And so the idea is, in kind of the Vedic society, is that then those karmas that are given to you by birth, those karmas you do with that Ishvara Arpana Buddhi. You do it as prayerfully to Ishvara, as a worship of Ishvara. And so that means that in doing that, your mind gains in antakarana shuddhi. By sticking to the karmas that are there, the karmas means really the dharmas that are there, that you were born into, you perform those, that is basically your sadhana, that's your worship. It's not, Shankara says, it's not just doing rituals or prayers or the Sanskrit prayers and all, it's not just that. Say you think, well, I go to church every day, and so I'm doing my worship to Bhagavan. Krishna said, no. Your whole life is that. The whole life. Not just taking, you know, an hour out here and there to do your prayers and your worship. Your whole life is that. Because this world that you've been given, this dharma that you've been born into, this is your sadhana, really. It's your sadhana. For antakarana shuddhi, so let the whole life be committed to doing your duties as a worship of Ishvara. So here, what he says is, it's the one from whom all beings take their birth. It's the creation of all beings, right? Come from me, Bhagavan said. They come from Ishvara. The creation of all beings come from Ishvara. And Ishvara is all of these beings. When you say he pervades all of these beings, pervades as Brahman. But it's not that the clay pervades the pot. Right? The clay is the pot. This whole creation is nothing but a manifestation of Brahman. It's a manifestation of consciousness. It has no separate existence, no separate being. All of this, the Sat-Chit, Sat-Chit means all of this is known, all of this enjoys consciousness. And from your standpoint as a jiva, everything is known and everything is. That's the common denominator. That common denominator is Brahman. And Brahman, what is my Brahman experience? It's not an object in the world. It's my very self. So this twofold here. Here I am, my being, this me, which is Brahman, and then the entirety of my experience, which is what? It is Brahman, it is Ishwara. We say Ishwara because Maya. But really, what is it? It is Brahman. Really, what is the pot? It's clay. What really is this? This is my being. This is my being with the Maya Upadhi. That's what it is. But what that means is that this actually, this Ishwara, this Ishwara, what we call Ishwara, right, is nothing but, let me put it like this. This is the difference between a jnani, somebody who has jnanam, and someone who is a karma yogi. You start out as a karma yogi. Okay? If you're a mumukshu, you're going to be a karma yogi until you're a jnani. So here we're starting out as a karma yogi, which means what? I see the life that I have, right, as Ishwara. And I do. This is now in the West. This is how it is down the West and the East, because the Varna system is broken down. You know, because people have just moved away from it, and everybody's more or less an individual now. But it doesn't make any difference. It doesn't make any difference at all, because that system is still there. I am still born into my particular life. I've taken this birth. This is my prarabdha karma. Right? And so now, what is my attitude toward this prarabdha karma? Now I see my attitude toward this, my prarabdha karma, is my attitude toward Ishwara. I see all of this only as Ishwara. And so every choice I make, everything that I do, every action that I take is a puja. Every action is a puja to Ishwara. And so what does that mean? That I do, as a jiva within this total, I do my dharma. What is my dharma? It's not as defined as it used to be. In India, it was so very well clear what the dharmas were, what the duties were. But that doesn't mean I can't know what my duties are. What is called on me every moment? What am I being asked to do every moment in my life? And I like to translate that, but this, everybody has their own language. But what I see in terms of the wording of it is just simply, how can I help? How can I be useful? That's all. And I say those words. Those words work for me, but I see Swamiji as an embodiment of that. There's nothing else going on there. You know, how can I help? What should be done here? What is useful to do here? What is helpful to do here? Yeah. And so that's my dharma. And if you look at this your whole life, the whole power of the karma, and look at that, it places that itself in the whole universe, as part and parcel of the universe, then what else would be? How else would you talk about your duty? Or what is being asked of you? It's hard to really, for me, it's hard to think of something else. Well, you could say, well, I just want to get the most that I can out of this. Okay? So you say that I want to get the most that I can. I want to get what's mine. But then you have to analyze what is it that you mean by that. Getting the most that you can out of this is what you're really saying, probably, is not that I want to be miserable. I want to be as happy as I possibly can be. I want to be as whole as I possibly can be. Right? I want to be as full as I possibly can be. Not that I want to knock you off and knock you off and knock you off. I only want to knock you all off because in my mind somehow I think that that's what's going to make me happy. So really what I want is to be as whole and complete as I possibly can be. And what the whole Shastra is saying, to be able to get that, then you just do your duty every moment. You just do your duty. Do what is asked of you to be done. Yeah. Do what others need you to do. Be helpful. If you want to feel, if you want to have that experience of being whole and complete. And that type of attitude brings about, it takes you very close to being a jnani. That Ishvara Arpana Buddhi, where I am just worshipping that one from whom this whole creation has come. I gain the shanti from that attitude. I gain that shanti. And that shanti allows me to gain this knowledge because my mind's available for it. I'm not chasing after my raga and dvesha, my likes and dislikes. I want this so I can be happy. I want this so I can be happy. I want this person to be like this so I can be happy. So I'm just running around trying to manipulate the world to become happy. But what if I'm not doing that? What if what is most important to me is Bhagavan, is Ishwara? Yeah. What if I just do and let and see in India of old, that's what comes naturally because of the culture. You know, this is what I'm supposed to do. This is what is being asked of me. You know, and all the prayers and everything that they do on a daily basis. All of this type of Ishvara Arpana Buddhi is something that's kind of there in the culture, much more than it is for us. For us, it's, I would say, maybe intuitive in a way, but it's not taught in the same way, I don't think, at all. And so what happens for us now, we have to translate all this Varna system. We have to translate it all to understand what does it mean for us now. Say, well, what it means, this is your prarabdha karma every moment, you're never outside of it. And so what is being asked of me? How can I be helpful? And what you're doing there is really giving up your raga dvesha, or you're surrendering your raga dvesha, making your raga dvesha secondary to your dharma. And the dharma is just what is being asked of you at this moment. And a good way to translate that is to be welcoming to the moment. How can I be welcoming to this moment? How can I be a helpful person in this moment? When you talk like that, then there's no resistance to the moment. You're here to be, you're here and part of it. And you welcome it and you try to be a helpful person. And then what you find is that your mind doesn't have conflict. It just kind of wipes out the conflict because this body, mind, sense organs here, this person here, is in no way arguing or has an issue with Ishvara. There's no issue. I'm not fighting Ishvara. I'm just here as a servant. Now, why I say that is there's Shankara wrote this beautiful, I know I've talked about it before. It's an Eka Shloki, one shloka. And he says, as a prayer to Bhagavan, he says, O Lord, from the standpoint of my body, I am your servant. Because that's what it is. Here I am, this body, mind, sense organs, in this prarabdha karma, and I just want to do what you want me to do. I want to want what you want. It's not like this is some God in heaven or somebody else. This infinite creation is my being. It's not somebody else. This is the infinite intelligence of which this body, mind, sense organs is a limited intelligence. You see that? Infinite intelligence and these limited intelligences are within this limitless intelligence. And so I can say, I want what you want. I didn't want anything to be different. And how can I say that? It's because of the teaching, because where is the ananda located? Is the ananda located out here? Or is the ananda my nature? I want something to be different because if I could have that, I would be happy. But what if you realize that there is no ananda out there? The ananda is the very swarupa, the very nature of the atma, the self. There is no love out there. The love is the nature of the self. Mm. And so the more you relax, the more the mind... Right? is not fighting that ananda. It's not resisting the ananda. Is it shanti? Shanti. What if you're not resisting the ananda? Then there's no problem. Because what does everybody want? Everybody wants to be whole, complete, to feel loved, to feel loved, to feel wanted, to feel worthy, worth something. When you feel loved, you feel worthy. You know? When you feel loved, you feel good. You feel like a good person. A loved person is a good person. You know? A loved person is a wanted person. All of these, they're just words. Wanted means somebody has to want me. Somebody only has to want you so you can feel wanted. But the feeling of wanted is the very swarupa of the Atma. There is nobody more wanted than the Atma. That is the absolute want. But he is the wanted one. Bhagavan, the self, is the wanted one. You know? Being loved, the loved one is the wanted one. That makes sense, right? The loved one is the wanted one. But that loved, that completed state, condition, is the very swarupa of the self. So all you need is to get your mind out of the way. Get the jiva, the resisting one, who's saying, my ananda's over there, or it's over there, or it's over there. And of course you want that, because you've projected it over there, then you have to run after that. What if with this teaching, as this teaching develops, you recognize that isn't true? You see it again and again and again from so many ways. So that now you don't want your body, mind, sense organs to be in the way of your being. Let Ishwara have it. Let this body, mind, sense organs be part of Ishwara, which it is. It's nothing new. It's not like you're not part of Ishwara. That's what you are. You're like a cell in the body. Yeah. And so why not allow that and enjoy this life? That's the idea. And so the person who understands this, the more you understand this, and you begin to understand it through your knowledge, right? And then your whole attitude toward your life becomes karma yoga. Karma yoga means I do my dharma. And even if I have likes and dislikes, I put dharma first. I go ahead. So you really want... We all have likes. We all have raga dvesha. Everybody has raga dvesha. But it doesn't have to be binding. You know? It's not binding if dharma comes first. It's not binding if Ishwara comes first. And if you don't get your way, you don't get your way. It doesn't really matter. Dharma comes first. That's the major commitment. The ananda that I'm trying to find is my own being. What if as I understand this, all these words become just, they're either a sadhana or they're the way I am. They're a sadhana for the mumukshu. They're the way I am for a jnani. For a jnani, I am Ishwara. Because this me that is me, is Brahman. And Brahman is the self from whom this whole creation comes, sustains, and goes back. So there is no me that is not Brahman. I'm not a jiva, I'm Brahman. Right? So sometimes now when we're doing this meditation, I'm asking you to... Sometimes when we're doing this meditations, I'm asking you to make this little switch from being aware of yourself to being yourself. Because actually, in the being aware of yourself, you are being yourself. Just notice that, that is me, that's not somebody else. This conscious being that I am is the conscious being that I am. There's nobody looking at me. I am that. And that I am is Brahman. And this body, mind, sense organs belongs, is part and parcel of Ishwara. And so recognizing that, let it be part of Ishwara. It is part of Ishwara, let it be part of Ishwara. Because of ajnanam, because of self-ignorance, the jiva, there is no jiva really, the jiva is that product of self-ignorance, the jiva thinks itself as a little isolated entity that has to make its way and make itself happy. That's what it thinks, it's misery. But that is the effect of the ajnanam. What about when that ignorance is removed? When it's really removed, then I am Ishwara. And so this body, mind, sense organs belongs to this whole, so let it be part of this whole. Let me be here. Let me live here and do what needs to be done. When there's the Agnanimus there, Swamiji calls it, I'm living in the creation ground, the cremation ground of the past.
What? Say that again?
Swamiji says, I'm living in the cremation ground of the past.
Yeah.
You know? In the ruins of the past, the cremation ground of the past. Or I'm lost in the worries about the future. That's all the jiva srishti, that's all born of ajnanam. I end up letting all of it go. Until I let it all go, it's just a sadhana. I just worship all of this as Bhagavan and say, whatever you want, I want. That's good enough for me. Why is it good enough for me? It's because the ananda that I truly seek in the world is my own being. There is no external ananda. It does not exist. We've lived our lifetimes, beginning those lifetimes, trying to make that work, and it will never work because it's like trying to get, you know, blood from a stone. It's not going to happen because it's not out there. There's a grand illusion going on, and once we see through that illusion and start owning it up, you know, after, you know, lifetimes of trauma, now we start to understand what's really going on, and then my mind starts to live that, and that becomes my highest value. To live that until it's just natural to me. And it's so rewarding that it doesn't take that long. It is so rewarding because it's not like somebody's trying to fool you and say, I'm just trying to make you think that the ananda is your own being. You know, I'm going to try to, maybe if you believe that, you'll be happier. No, it's not like that. It's that there is no, you try to look at some ananda, like trying to look at some existence. When you experience ananda, it's not a subject-object experience. It is your being. So you start to understand this more and more and more, and you start to give up all of your raga dveshas as though they matter. You can have them, but don't let them be, and you will have them, because they provide you the energy to get things done, but don't think that they really, really matter. You don't need them. That's the thing. So, the person who really understands this, the Swakarmana, they worship Ishwara by their karma. The karma is not just rituals and prayers. The karma is this prarabdha that you find yourself in, let me be with it as Ishwara. That's the beauty of this verse. Oh, let's stop there. This next verse has like 5 pages of commentary on it.
Yeah, it's long.
Yeah, I know. And the one after that is long too. It's a very famous verse. I don't feel like doing it right now. It's too big of a...
Well, it's late.
Yeah, so this is good enough for now. Om swasti prajapati paripalinam nyayena margena mahimmahishah go brahmane pyashramasti nityam lokasamasta sukhino bhavantu kale varshatu parjanyah prithivi sasya shalini desho yamsho varahitah Brahmana santu nirbhayaha Om sarve bhavantu sukhinaha Sarve santu niramayaha Sarve bhadrani pashyantu Ma kaschid dukkha bhag bhavet Asato ma sadgamaya Tamaso ma jyotirgamaya Mrityorma amritamgamaya Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.
Since the mind's limited, is, and it's not my being, my being is free of the mind.
Yeah, but you're the mind in has itself, yourself for its being.
Yeah, okay.
You have to always remember that. That's okay. Satyamitya.
But if you're continually illuminating the mind, and that mind has a sense of limitation, or that it's not, it still can be more full. What do you do with that tendency? You know, I mean, the mind will say, well, so what? I understand I'm present. I understand that I'm knowingness. And yet the mind will still be there as, we want more. Or is this all? Because the mind has that kind of limitation, doesn't it? Or is that?
No, I mean that type of limitation is a complex or a jnana-born limitation. I mean, the mind isn't unreasonable. It's not going to say, "I want to be Ishvara in terms of the swarupa.
Mm-hmm.
I want the infinite swarupa of Ishvara."
Mm-hmm.
The infinite svabhava, you know, the infinite upadhi. I don't want my little limited upadhi. That's not going to happen. That could happen for...
Well, the mind says, I want the well-being of Ishvara. That's what it says.
Yeah, but that's the ajnanam.
Mm-hmm.
Because the well-being of Ishvara is the well-being of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so we're still looking for situational well-being.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not going to happen. You have... part-time, sometimes you have situational well-being, and sometimes you won't. That's how it's going to be. It's 50-50. This universe is really meant to make mumukshus out of everybody. You know, because you'll have situational well-being, interpersonal well-being, and then you won't. Yeah. And so you learn to gain some objectivity just in samsara.
So you shouldn't expect the mind to get into this steady state of I've made it to the end goal and I will always be happy then from there on. The mind won't do that. It'll keep bouncing.
Now, that's not exactly what I'm saying. Yourself is not bouncing.
Sure.
Okay. But the self that you are, your nature, the who you are, is the self of the mind. But if you say sure, then that if the mind recognizes its own being, because it's not away from us, but it's really like the pot recognizing the clay. If your mind recognizes its own being as ananda, you really know yourself, then this isn't a question anymore. Because the self, your being, is by nature whole. There is nothing more whole than your being. And there's nothing else changeless, but your mind is never away from that. And so, but the mind's tendency is only to look out. It's only comparing one situation with another situation, one state of mind with another state of mind. But that's what changes. And the self becomes the very refuge for the mind. You know, the sharanam means the mind enjoying myself, because the mind has recognized the stability of myself, the ananda of myself, just my own nature. Loving that, having its rati. Rati means, you know, reveling in that. Then it experiences the world. Not asking the world for that because I have that.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So I am whole and complete. Not because the mind is whole and complete. The mind has all kinds of thoughts, but the self of the mind is always whole and complete. So no matter what you're thinking, or what emotion is there, or what kind of samsara is going on, I am whole and complete. And so whole and complete, the mind, whatever's going on in the mind, it enjoys that wholeness. Because that wholeness is invariable. It doesn't go away. So that viveka needs to be there. Yeah. And so part of what Krishna is saying here, this attitude of way of being in the world is a way of neutralizing these raga dveshas. Because raga dvesha, there's nothing wrong with raga dvesha, you know, your likes and dislikes, if they're not binding. Binding means if I don't get my way, if it doesn't work out the way I want, I'll be really unhappy. That's binding. Non-binding is, yeah, let me do this, let me do that. This is where my energy is. This is what I want to do. But if it doesn't work out, that's fine. I'm not at stake. That's not binding. You have to have to, even to do anything, you have to have preferences. Why do I do this instead of this? Why do I do anything at all? Because there's preferences. There's desire. But the desire, if the desire is binding, that's samsara. If it's not binding, then that's the prarabdha karma. That's just my life.
So what does Swamiji mean when he says that sometimes my mind can be...
There's all kinds of funny things.
There's all kinds of funny stuff.
Means you can have... Those funny things aren't binding. You don't take them seriously. It's just your mind. You know how much input is pouring into the mind every minute? Let alone every second? How much input is just flowing in? There's going to be stuff flowing out also. But it's mithya. You don't have to have some deep commitment to these type of thoughts that are coming and going if they're not useful. And you don't have to judge yourself by your thoughts. Or, you know, why should you judge yourself by your thoughts? A thought comes and goes, it's gone.
Because you think you're your thoughts?
Yeah, because you think you are your thoughts, but you're not. What happens when you recognize you? The one who's not coming and going, who's not changing, is whole and complete. And you have to get in touch with your own nature. The mind's used to only looking at different dresses that you're wearing as you, rather than the one who's wearing the dresses. No more shirts for you guys. I won't put you in dresses.
Dotis.
Dotis. Dotis. Yeah. It takes a while to withdraw from this delusion, really. Because it's shared. It's a shared delusion, which makes it somewhat real for everybody.
Because everybody goes by it.
Everybody, yeah. And until you don't, then you become a wise person. I think part of the task, at least I just notice myself teaching like this more and more, part of the task is to gain a value for doing these sadhanas. So you don't just come to class, hear it, walk out the door and everything closes over and then you wait till the next class. To where this verse, you know, is how you live your life. You know, that you learn how to do this inner child work. You know, you get into a habit of bringing your mind back to the present. Mm-hmm. That's a powerful habit. Mm-hmm. Because the mind spends so much time out in its imaginal world and creating a lot of emotions.
Well, bringing it back to the present, meaning you just stop thinking.
No,
just stop.
Stop. You can think in the present, right? Stop this imaginal worry that you're engaged in, or these terrible regrets and, you know, over the cremation ground. You know, we're dancing around in the cremation ground. It's dead and gone. So you have to say, okay, these things happen. Here I am now. What do? Here I am now.
Yeah.
Whatever's going to happen is going to happen. But what is there for me to do now? There's nothing for, in this la-la land of the future, there is nothing out there right that is here right now for you to do. You can't do those things now because they're not here. But there is something here for you to do. So let me do my dharma. So just to say it very simply, let me do my dharma here. Let me be here. And so it's such a beautiful sadhana to just bring your mind back to Ishvara. Because we're living in Jiva Srishti all the time, so have a value. See, I'm not, I can say, now bring your mind back to Ishvara, that's not good enough. Because that won't mean anything.
Yeah.
What means something is, do I have the value to even try to do that? Is that important for me to try to do?
Well, what's important, it seems to me, is to be present. And being present means not brooding over the past or worrying about the future.
I mean, yeah, yes. But then you can say, because I know how minds can work, you can say, now you can say that that's important. And then when you come back to the next class, you can say, I don't know why that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
That's what I would want to happen, but I don't know why it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen because you're not doing it. So I'm saying you need a commitment inside to tell you that says, you wake up in the morning and say, okay, today I'm actually going to try to do this. When I catch my mind in this samsara, you know, in this imaginal world, I'm going to try to come back to the present and look out through my sense organs and be here and see what is being asked of me right now. To ground myself here. And to have a practice. Like, what if it's too much to carry that all day? Say, okay, five times a day I am going to do that. Because what happens, honestly, is if you do that, your mind gets used to doing it.
Yeah.
You get used to living here. And it's so much better. It is so much better to live here and do what is to be done here. Because there's so many imaginary problems that all of a sudden aren't there. No, we live in an imaginary world full of problems and horror stories and catastrophic thinking.
Most of which never happens.
Yeah, no, most of which never ever happens. It's all imaginal.
Yeah.
So you get used, you have to get used to coming here. And say you're having some, say you're living here and something's going on here and you have some big reaction. Let's be with that reaction. And do the inner child work or ask yourself, that reaction is here and now. So deal with it here and now and say to the little one inside, I think it's useful to say like this, what's really going on? What is really bothering you? And then get down to the reality of it. Because usually the reactions you have nothing to do with what's going on out here.
Something the source origin of the reactions are elsewhere.
Right. Something has triggered a complex.
Yeah.
And that complex has been projected onto the environment, whatever that environment, the person or the environment, and then you're living inside the complex. And so all you need to do, you know, is just ask that one who's hurting, and in that reaction, what is this really about? In a kind way, as a friend, as a good friend, philosopher, and guide, as Swamiji will say, you ask what's really bothering me? What is this really about? And then you listen to that story and give some comfort to that story, you know, which is really what's actually happening. That's what's really bothering you. It has nothing to do with the people out here or the situation out here. It has to do with a hurt that's been triggered. And because what happens is when you're little and whatnot, usually a lot of these big hurts happen before you're 4 or 5 years old. You know? And what happens is that your defense system is, you know, right on the unconscious. It's that It's that line between the conscious and the unconscious. So your defense system is actually unconscious when you're little. It just takes care of you. It takes care of the things that are too painful, you know, and it just swallows it, you know, and sticks it inside there so that you don't have to experience it. Because you can't. It's too painful. Little mind can't handle it. And so it handles it for you, and then it keeps it in there. It guards it like the guards are there.
We won't look at it.
Yeah, it keeps you from seeing it because that is its job.
It's sort of like a old operational...
Yes, and it was system. Necessary back then, and now it's working against you.
Mm-hmm.
And so now what happens is that if anything that kind of is like what happened when you were little comes up, it like pokes at it.
Mm-hmm.
And that hurt overwhelms the mind, and that overwhelmed mind is now in this situation and blames the situation for that overwhelm.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was some sort of a trigger that hit that caused that projection to overwhelm the buddhi. And so now you're there with all of those feelings, and this person caused it. This person did that to me. Or this situation did that to me. That's what projection is all about. So that's why I'm saying, what you're seeing out here is probably not, had nothing to do with it. It's a bubble. That's what a complex is. It's just a bubble. It's the jiva srishti that just overwhelms your situation. And that's why what you say, instead of taking all of this, this person's responsible and they did this and they did that, you just go inside and you say, what is this really about? And that little one will talk to you. It's either your dad did this to you, or your mother did this to you, or this happened. And if you're kind and caring, it'll talk to you. Eventually, maybe not at first, but it'll talk to you. Just like in the real world, if somebody comes and says in a really mean voice, you know, okay, what's all this about? you just
snap at it.
Snap out of it right now.
Straighten up.
Boom. Yeah. And so then you just, nothing's available. But if you're a friend, if you evoke your own, the anand of your own being, really, you know, then it'll tell you. And that is so useful because now you're withdrawing the projection and dealing with, in real time, with a complex that is there, that actually exists there now.
Mm-hmm.
And this situation triggered it. And so now it is there alive and well for you to actually be with. That's a blessing, actually.
Mm-hmm.
If you can do this, because otherwise these complexes are lying dormant, and they just come up and overwhelm when something triggers them. But if you know that, okay, when this is triggered now, this is what is happening, let me do that work because this complex is up. This little one is up, you know. So let me say what's really going on, and then I spend some time with it in real time. It's all Bhagavan. You're still honoring Ishvara. Because the complex is there in real time. It's there in your system. Your defense system has done its work to try to protect you, and at some it has to feel convinced that it can let go, that it can let this stuff out. For to let it out, you have to become stronger. The buddhi has to become stronger and stronger and stronger, and then the defense system will allow you to see more and more and more.
And
because otherwise, it doesn't trust that you can handle it. You have to let it know that you can handle this.
And you would... according to this verse, at least, consider that prayerful and worshiping one Ishvara. I mean,
because there's, yes, because if that little one is there to be taken care of, and you're kind, and that's what's there for you to do. And it's much more sane than running after a delusion, you know. But you won't even know you're running after a delusion unless you understand all of this. You know, that seems, complexes seem so real. They are your, They are your reality when they're taking place. It's hard for anybody to convince you that it's not real, because it's feelings. Feelings are more real than thoughts, because thoughts are taking place within feelings. Feelings aren't taking place within thoughts. You know, thoughts are taking place within feelings, so the feelings are real. You can't tell me I'm not having those feelings.
So there's a tendency of the manas to overwhelm
the buddhi. Mm-hmm. Until the buddhi knows how to behave, because when the manas is overwhelming the buddhi, all the buddhi has to say is, okay, tell me what's really going on. Then the buddhi is present. Mm-hmm. It's not pushing away the experience or anything, it's now engaging it. But when it engages it, then it's there. You know? Otherwise, the buddhi, the manas overwhelms the buddhi, and the buddhi now becomes the voice of the manas.
Yeah.
You know?
I always find it ironic that, I mean, you can turn a thought on a dime, you know, you can just turn it, switch it. And the emotions are, you seem to can't do that with them. They're
not as quick to turn, but they can be turned really quite quickly. They're not as quick to turn, for sure.
Yeah, you see with children more, how they can go from...
Yeah, boom, like that. Yeah. But we can do that also, now maybe not as fast for sure, but by welcoming it, as you welcome it, and allow it to be there, welcome it, then that a relaxation takes place that makes it dissipate. What makes it go on and on and on is we fight it, you know, and push it away, you know, and then build up thoughts around it, you know, so we're perpetuating it instead of just saying, okay, you can be with me. It's okay, be with me.
And what's the relationship, having a meditation practice, you know, where does that...
I think that in every meditation practice, until there is no child work that's beckoning you, it should come at the beginning of the meditation. It's part of your meditation that you do that initially. Does anyone inside have anything to say? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also that prayer to Bhagavan for whatever is on your mind, what are your worries, what are your things that you are bothering you, that kind of the buddhi prays to Ishwar, something greater than itself. The buddhi prays to Bhagavan, and then the buddhi also takes care of the little ones. First take care of the little ones, then pray to Bhagavan, and then your mind has some relative shanti to meditate. But if you don't take care of those little ones, don't give them any attention or anything, then they actually become an obstacle to absorption, because they're asking for attention and you're not giving it. And so there's like a force field inside that doesn't allow the mind to absorb, because they want your attention and you're trying to bypass them.
And what is that feeling like when...
It means you don't get any absorption. It's just like
a
quiet mind that is not absorbed. And so if you're meditating and you find your mind isn't absorbing into a deeper silence and a deeper sense of ananda and well-being, it's probably little ones in there, and that's a good time to say, okay, what's going on? Does anybody have anything to say? And then spend time doing that work.
Okay.
Yeah. Because it is often like there's stress underlying stress. And so let it talk to you and do the work. It's part of the whole process. It's as important as contemplating.
It's and so some stress or attention is what we're calling, there must be a voice of a little one.
Can
be.
Yeah. That's why you can ask what's happening.
And then you follow it up with the prayer to Bhagavan?
Well, what I'm saying is that, and sometimes when I'm teaching meditation, there's stages that are useful. So I'll say a couple, just very briefly, some stages would be that and necessities would be, don't put a time limit on your meditation that it should be so short or so long. Just forget about it. Whatever it is fine. That takes tension away from the mind and allows you to do it every day, because one day you might do it for 30 seconds and one day you might do it for an hour. So just give yourself that space to do it, and you will see what's the right amount of time for that day. Maybe you also want to have a different type of practice where you're doing something for an hour, but have this too, where it's just for you. And then be in a position where you're comfortable. If you do yoga and you're trying to get an asana position, don't use that if it's painful. Use that once you're relaxed. So sit in a relaxed position where the body can totally free to let go of any stress and strain. Then ask your mind, is there anything you're worried about? This is the conscious mind. These things only take just a few seconds, so they can take a long time. That doesn't matter either. You know, is there anything bothering you right now? Like, is there anything you want to tell me about right now for the conscious
mind? It'll organize itself very quickly if that question.
Probably. And there will be things usually, well, this is what's on my mind. You have to do this, you have to do that. There'll be some sort of a list, and you say, okay, I'll take care of those things. Then, you know, it can relax about that. It doesn't have this kind of thing, oh, she's not going to do that or do this. She's meditating instead, these things aren't going to get done. That's just simple. Just gets rid of that. Then you do the inner child work. Does anybody inside have anything to say? They want to say. And you might spend, you know, weeks or months only doing that. Because there's so many, the little ones have so much to say. You know. Then when that's the case, then that's your meditation for some time. Until that pressure has started to relieve itself. And then from there, you can say a prayer to Ishwara. What is it that I'm doing? What do I want? What am I trying to... What do I need? What am I worried about? And just give it all over to Bhagawan. That's just a series of steps. Maybe sometimes you don't do all of them. You don't need to do all of them. But you're very familiar with all of those steps. You know? And then you can contemplate. Maybe you'll do pranayama, you might do some japa, or you just might immediately go into contemplation. Mm. Yeah. And after you've done these steps long enough, all of those steps that I just went through, just become how you are as a person. So you don't need to do those steps in meditation because you're always doing those steps. If there's some problem with the little one inside, you know, you have a relationship, you have those relationships, so they're ongoing. And so then the little ones don't need special time because they're always having time. You don't need to give special prayer time to Ishwara because Ishwara, that prayer time's always there. You know, and so if you want to take some special time, you do. But initially, it has to just become something that you become adept at, that you understand that's part of who you are. And that brings the mind, that takes care of the unconscious. It takes care of the need for the buddhi to surrender itself to something greater than itself, to be held by something greater than itself. The buddhi is not going to be held by the little ones, it holds the little ones. So it needs to hand itself over to Ishwara. Yeah. And then your psyche is, for the moment, feeling healthy. There's some peace. And then meditation is meaningful and effective. But say you're trying to meditate, but there's other things that are bothering you and you're just trying to circumvent it. I don't think that works very well. I think that we should deal with whatever the issue is, and it becomes so second nature that things are always being taken care of, not just in meditation.
Yeah.
You see what I mean?
I've been thinking a lot after the last class, but it kind of came up today too. If if the self is always self-shining, how is it possible that the mind, maybe that, I mean, why do we need
knowledge? Well, because the mind itself, because it has self-ignorance, it's the mind takes itself to be that self-shining one, that's that self-evident one. And the mind is always changing and moody, sometimes happy, sometimes sad. And then the mind takes itself to be one with the body, so it's probably going to be subject to death, birth and death. And so all of the qualities of the mind are superimposed on the self. Even though your being is always present, it is always present in exactly the same way, the mind doesn't notice it because I am always there in exactly the same way, but the mind is continually changing. So the mind just says, I, the one who is actually always there in exactly the same way, it says, I am continually changing. I was like this, and now I'm like this, and now I'm like this, not realizing that that me is there in all of those states. It's called pratyabhijna. It says the mind will say, oh, I felt this way. I felt this way. And then I felt this way. And then I felt this way. What's the common denominator is me. Nothing's coming and going about me, but I've never differentiated me from these states. The mind is just going from one state to the other state with the other state, taking the me for granted and just looking at it only through the lens of the state that the mind is contributing. And actually all those states are objectified. There's a subject-object relationship with all of them. All of them come and go, you know. Mm. So what has to happen is I have to differentiate me, my being, from these objectified states that are coming and going and coming and going and coming and going. I have to recognize the ones who's not coming and going, and what am I like without those dresses? Not seeing myself through the lens of these things that are coming and going, but the one, seeing myself as the one who's actually illumining those lenses. You see?
So that's why you say it's the mind that attains moksha.
Mm-hmm. Because, well, I would say like this, the mind realizes, it gains moksha in the recognition that the self that I am is always liberated, never has not been liberated.
Mm-hmm.
The Atma is not attaining the moksha, the Atma has always been and always will be liberated. So the mind is the one, because of ignorance, that takes its very self to be limited. Because the self, the Atma, is the self of the mind, right? But the self doesn't change, the mind changes.
So all of this is in caring for the mind. The
problem belongs to the mind, not to the self. Well, look at the dream. The dream reality belongs to the dream jivas. It belongs to the dream. When you wake up from the dream, those problems weren't yours and they never were yours.
Yeah, untouched.
You never had those problems. Those problems belong to the dream. Right? And to the dream characters. And that's our situation here. I have no problems at all. There's no problems. There will never be any problems. There can't be any problems for me, for the self. But all the jivas running around have a lot of problems. And those problems are innate to the situation of being a jiva within duality. Like a jiva within the creation, it's like a dream character in the dream. You know, you can see the bind. Because everything about that dream character is warp and woof with the whole dream. So the limitations are intrinsic to the situation. Even though the very self, the very me of the dream character is the me of the whole dream. And free of the dream. So that dream is a good drishtanta. It's not the same as this, but it's a very powerful example.
Well, what isn't the same? It almost seems like the same.
Almost seems like the same, but then there's differences. There's ajnanam, the dream is taking place within the world, that type of thing.
It's not a shared reality.
But it is a shared reality for the dream characters inside the dream.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Extrinsically.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's call it a night.
Let's call it a